Hello, this is Martin Sheen, and you're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
California has always been in the forefront of having a progressive labor laws, whether it's the Agricultural Labor Relations Act or public sector worker organizing laws. And so I think we're fortunate. I think other states are not as fortunate, where they have right to work for less laws, like in Arizona or the South.
Good memories are forever. Set the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, all down the line.
Good morning, and welcome to The Working Week. This is KPFK's Working Voices. I'm Enrique Sanchez of Spanish United, filling in for Joe Ayala.
And this is your co-host, Kay Michael.
And in this morning show, Steve Zelser takes us to San Francisco for an ATSME 3299 UC Workers Rally. Reggie Wong speaks to organizers of the Black Friday Home Depot boycott. And Working Voices executive producer Damar Corey speaks with Ernesto Medrano, the executive secretary of the Los Angeles and Orange County's Building and Construction Trades Council. All this and more coming up on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
This week, Steve Zelser, from his Labor Video YouTube channel, brings us on the November 17th AFSCME 3299 rally in San Francisco to hear what UC workers have to say about the contract negotiations that the state has stalled on for the past 2 years.
My name is Yanya Hernandez, and I'm a hospital assistant here at UCSF and also been a MAT leader for about 4 years.
So what's going on here? I mean, AFSCME's been negotiating for a long time for a contract, and you haven't had a contract. I understand they've taken away increased health care benefits, all kinds of violations of labor law on top of trying to get a contract.
That's correct. Unfortunately, we've been without a contract a little over a year and a half now, going on 2 years, really. And we're calling this an economic strike today. And absolutely, they are not bargaining in good faith. We're not giving us sustainable living wages that anybody, you know, can live off of. We're living paycheck to paycheck. They keep increasing our health care premiums. You know, our co-pays have gone up. Our cost of medications is gone up, and during a time of inflation, you know, and under the administration we're under, working class is definitely under attack.
And some members have to live in their cars.
Yeah.
The question of housing and commuting,
yes,
having the cost of coming to San Francisco.
That's correct. I've heard many stories in talking to people where people are oftentimes working 2 to 3 jobs just to make ends meet now. A lot of folks are having to commute in 2 hours here, 2 hours to get home. I mean, it's just not sustainable. And I have heard of instances where people are living out of their cars because they just can't afford the rent. People are living paycheck to paycheck.
And it seems like they have a lot of money for billions of dollars for these new buildings here. They're buying hospitals. They bought St. Joseph's, St. Francis, and yet the workers can't survive. What does that say about the regions and the management you see?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they've got all this money to expand. If you can see here at Parnassus, they're also expanding. And there's all these, you know, these new clinics that have popped up, you know, along the peninsula. I mean, it really, that's just very minor compared to what that says about how they treat their employees. They obviously don't respect us. They don't see us as a priority.
And also, you know, my brother was here. He had to wait overnight to get a room in the emergency room. What's going on with staffing? It seems like there's not enough staffing. It's harming, really, the patients that need health care.
That's correct. Unfortunately, an inpatient versus outpatient, even the clinics, like there's short staffing has still been an issue. They're still contracting out and bringing in temp staff. This really negatively impacts the patient care that we provide. It impacts us as employees. It really slows us down. We don't have the resources we need. We're overworked and oftentimes doing the work for two people.
And if the Regents, governor is on the Board of Regents ex officio, where are the politicians who really are in charge of UC?
Well, unfortunately, they're nowhere to be found, and we just feel totally abandoned. You know, it's interesting how during the pandemic we were supposedly heroes, but the only treatment we're receiving now is just, it's undignified and it's completely wrong.
And what can people do about it? People want to support UC. It's a great, should be a great hospital, one of the best in the world. People want a great public hospital.
We want to provide quality care, and they should be ashamed of themselves for treating their workers like this. And we support people who, you know, support us and our endeavors to, want to fight for living wages. And
everyone should have living wages. And then the fact is you're working in a hospital and you can't even afford the health care costs. I mean, it's outrageous to be single payer. People should all get health care. And yet you're having to gouge you from your wages for more health care?
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And again, it's a sign of the times that current administration we're under, and just being a working class, union, this labor movement really speaks to the times that we're in right now, where we have to fight just for our own basic needs to be met.
I showed up today.
Why are you concerned? What's happening? What for you? What's important for you?
Greed is happening. That's what it is. That, basically, to all of us, that's my opinion. Greed is happening.
Former supervisor, the San Francisco supervisor, Dean Preston.
Thank you, everyone. I'm Dean Preston. I represented District 5 as a supervisor. Used to include Parnassus campus in District 5. I really hoped we didn't have to be out here yet again. I feel like it's been going on, what, almost 2 years where I've been coming. It's always raining and cold whenever I come. I think this is my third time at this campus with you all, and I hope it's the last, right? I hope that they're going to come to their senses and actually respect you all. But in the meantime, before they come to their senses and show some respect, I think the least we can do, people who have been in leadership in this city, is to come out and support you. So I will be back as many times as it takes until you all get a fair contract.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, my area for 20 years before I was in office, I was a tenant rights lawyer fighting against evictions. And then when I got on the Board of Supervisors, we did a lot of work to stop evictions and to create affordable housing. And it breaks my heart that the people who are powering all the great institutions of our city don't get to live in our city. That you got people who are working their butts off here at this hospital who are sleeping in their cars or who are driving hours in some cases to get here, and then don't earn a living wage, can't afford their health care, and certainly can't afford to live near where they work. Does any of that sound familiar?
Yep, sure does.
Is any of that acceptable?
No.
Now, we are dealing with a public institution, and in some ways it makes it even worse. I am used to showing up at rallies in front of private businesses and billionaire CEOs and saying to them, shame, shame, shame. But it breaks my heart as a democratic socialist, someone who believes that government can actually offer solutions and act better than the private sector, to see the UC system act like every other arrogant billionaire boss out there and sit on reserves of billions of dollars, and build luxury housing across the street for the highest wage workers while forgetting about all of you and not even coming to the table and negotiating in good faith to make sure that you can take care of yourselves and your families. So I say this to those who are leading UC, to those who refuse to come to the table and bargain in good faith with AFSCME 3299, I say to you the same thing I say to the private billionaires. I say to you, those who are leading this institution, who look at billions of dollars sitting in bank accounts while workers are actually unable to feed and care for their families, I say to you the same thing I say to the private equity billionaire, and that is this: shame.
Shame.
But I know that you all are going to win this fight. And let's be very clear, it is just a matter of time, because you are one of the strongest, most resilient unions that exists on this planet. And I've seen you all out here, and they always do this, right? This is not the first time. They resolve with every other union. You all are holding out, and they think that they're going to drive you into the ground by delaying, delaying, and delaying. And you know that that's not going to happen. It hasn't worked in the past, and it's not going to work now. And they owe it to you to come to the table and to treat you with respect and to see the work that you are doing that is how these institutions survive. So one thing we know, and one thing we see over and over again, is that when we fight, and I know that it doesn't matter if it's windy, rainy, or cold, that you will be back as many days as needed. And call me anytime and I will be here with you. And I just want to say this, because they all say it to you: I am sorry. I am sorry that you get treated this way. It's totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. You all powered us through. I was in office during a pandemic. You all went to work and powered us through a pandemic. You led us through a recovery. You educate, I mean, you're the folks who are making sure we can educate people in this state. We can take care of patients. We can get through crisis. And this is what you get? People won't even come to the bargaining table. So there's not a word for it. We said shame, but there's not even a word to describe how offensive it is to see you treated in that way. So I am sorry that we are in a society with a huge institution like this that will treat the workers that power these institutions in this way. And I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for not only all the work you do every day, but for taking a stand on behalf of yourselves, your families, and all workers. So hang in there. I know it's tough, but hang in there. And you have allies all across the city who are going to mobilize in support. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and for fighting this fight. When we fight,
we win.
When we fight,
we win.
When we fight,
we win.
All workers around the world, around the Bay, need to support each other in solidarity. AFSCME, these are some of the lowest paid workers in UC. They're the janitors, the custodians, the food service workers. And as someone in UAW, I think we all need to stand in solidarity with each other. We need to all support each other's efforts. People in AFSCME, like a lot of these guys, they commute from like Stockton and stuff because they're priced out of the Bay. And they only get paid like $25 an hour, you know? So, yeah, I think we all just need to stand together, or else we can't win anything.
What's your name?
I'm sorry?
What's your name?
I'm James. I'm in the UAW. Okay.
So, it's a rich institution. If they have all this money in the bank, why are they not paying the workers?
That's a great question. Yeah, I wonder why. I think they're explaining it well in the chants. I mean, it's just pure greed. They keep hiring more and more administrators. And they're giving these guys $100,000, $500,000, $1 million salaries. They're buying up all the hospitals. It's all just, it's for investments, it's profits for the people on the top, not for the people on the bottom who actually do the work.
I think it's a public institution. It seems like it's run by private entrepreneurs, private billionaires.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And they care a lot about their investments and not the people who work in the institution.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at www.labormedia.net. 90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles. Up next, for Working Voices, we have Reggie Wong bringing us this interview with Kutsal from Hill and Miriam from the Boycott Home Depot Coalition. They discussed about this Black Friday's Abolish ICE event and how people can support workers being targeted under LA's federal occupation.
This is Reggie Wong with this Working Voices update, and I'm here with Miriam and Kutsal. Can you introduce yourselves?
Yes, my name is Miriam Orkandual, and I am a local labor activist and a part of the Boycott Home Depot Coalition, which is over 60 organizations throughout California that have come together to boycott Home Depot over their complicity in ICE raids.
And Kutsal.
So I'm Kutsal. I also work with the Home Depot Boycott Coalition and Hill, and I work with the Day Labor Support Committees of both organizations.
What is going to happen on Black Friday?
Yes, Black Friday, we are bringing the resistance to Torrance. We want to send a clear statement to businesses that we will not tolerate their complicity in these illegal and inhumane ICE raids. As we have seen, there's a lot more businesses can be doing to keep ICE out of parking lots and from inside stores. They can ask for warrants, which is in their legal right to do so, and which many California businesses have not been doing. So we just need them to take more accountability. These raids are illegal, and we need our communities to start acting as such.
Why does ICE target Home Depot?
Unfortunately, it's as sad as Stephen Miller, one of Trump's aides, had directed ICE to no longer focus on illegal immigrants. And he said their quota was too low and that they should, you know, have a quota, I believe, of like 3,000 a day that they arrest, and that they should stop targeting criminals and they should just go to Home Depots and start picking up laborers. So it is that petty. Now they try to backtrack it and say, oh, there's criminals. I think we all frequent at our Home Depot parking lots, and we know that's not, you know, where criminals frequent.
It's also the fact that day laborers have historically been outside of the Home Depots and like car washes where people like actually are looking for day-to-day work where they can't find work anywhere else, and they've constantly been under attack. But now these are the place where you can find gatherings of people who are working, and that's what they're doing. They're looking for work at both of these locations. They're not there doing anything else but looking for work, and that's who they attacked.
Are the day laborers, are they beneficial to Home Depot?
They are. So Home Depot historically is a place where you can come and get the materials to do it yourself. And then they offer, unofficially, they offer the ability to have cheap labor outside their stores. And also, like, most of the day laborers that are out there do actually shop at Home Depot because they get their materials from there. So we've learned that not only, like, they are making money off of having this cheap labor outside and from people that they need to buy their tools. They need to buy, like, construction supplies for them to do that. So Home Depot benefits and makes money off of having this, like, population outside of their parking lot. I do want to add that actually the West Coast CEO has also invited ICE to come out and clean up their parking lots, as he put it.
Yeah, I think just in general, a lot of people, well, the reason why they chose Home Depot is over a Lowe or anything else is because of the day laborers, right? As a film student, every time we needed something done or like had to figure something out, we would not only go to Home Depot for the materials, but also for the assistance that the day laborers provided. And you still, I mean, we spend time at Home Depots all the time. You see all the customers are still going up to day laborers after they buy their equipment to figure out how to install or, you know, make sure they can actually use the equipment they've bought. So Home Depot is definitely doing a disservice to itself by attacking the day, allowing the day laborers to go attacked.
I want to ask Quetzal, is ICE just targeting day laborers, or have you seen them take anybody else?
Well, they actually have picked up customers that are shopping inside their stores. They basically have actually targeted anybody of color who they feel like is going to be like picked up in San Pedro, in Hawthorne, Home Depots. They have taken actual customers that are loading up their trucks or in their cars with materials, or people who have just walked out of Home Depot after they go shopping. And anybody around there, any street vendors that are actually also working, they're selling flowers or they're selling food. Those are being targeted everywhere around the Home Depots in their parking lots that is not like that is working is being picked up by ICE.
Actually, can any of you give me an example of some of the raids that you've witnessed?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few, unfortunately. There's been like in Century, it started on the 4th of July where they came in and grabbed everybody they could. They grabbed up like 22 people. They've also hit Century where they came with, there was like 4 or 5 day laborers there, and they surrounded them with 30 or 40 armed masked individuals that they came, and they basically come in and grab people. They don't ask any questions. They chase them. They knock them to the floor. People have never had a chance to say, hey, what am I doing? They use the excuse, you know, of not, they never respected the TRO, even when they had a TRO. And so they basically come in aggressively. I mean, the fact that their mask is really aggressive, but their military uniforms, they have guns, you know, and they just come and grab you. And even if they do ask, like, you have papers, that's, you know, after they've pinned you to the ground or they've thrown you against a car or there's 6 or 7 surrounding one person taking you. This is sort of like the experiences that I've witnessed. They just rush you. They come in running while you're standing. It's such an automatic thing to look up and see them running at you. Of course, people run or people try to hide or something because they aggressively are going after people. At the most of the ones that I witnessed, I've also witnessed people loading up their cars and they come and surround the cars. It's very aggressive and very terrifying for anybody, not just the day laborers. You've never experienced basically having these uniformed armed goons surrounding you. Like, people are just standing there. They're not armed. They're just standing there looking for work. And then you're surrounded by military gear, mask van.
I was wondering if anybody could tell me about the surveillance equipment that Home Depot has been using in their parking lots. And what do they do with that information?
So they have technology in their parking lots that catalogs people's license plate information and their vehicle information. And a Canadian reporter did some investigative research and found that they were indeed exchanging this information that they got about the cars with law enforcement. And so, again, Home Depot claims they're not complicit, but their actions speak otherwise.
So how can people get involved?
First and foremost way, don't shop at Home Depot. Support the boycott, please. Second, you can figure out how to get trained to come and patrol at Home Depots to try to keep the day laborers safe and alert the community about ICE raids and just make sure everyone is aware. They can look up our boycott at Boycott Home Depot on Instagram. We have a toolkit that provides educational flyers for customers, for day laborers, how they can keep safe, how customers can go to mom and pop shops, local mom and pop shops instead of Home Depots. And there's a whole bunch of ways, other ways they can help. We try to find alternative work for day laborers. We try to do fundraising community events. And so there's something for everyone to do. So if anyone would like to get involved, again, our Instagram page is Boycott Home Depot. Please follow us and you'll be able to see all of the things we have going on.
Also, will people be able to learn about the event on Black Friday?
Yes.
Just like the time and location?
Yes. So it will be at noon on Black Friday. And then for location details, please do follow us and we'll post it on our social media for everyone to share.
And that's Instagram? And
yes, it's on Instagram primarily. So yes, find our Instagram page at Boycott Home Depot.
And Quetzal, can you tell us what Hill does at the Home Depots?
Well, we principally do care packages. We deliver like packages that are needed, water, peanuts, nuts, masks, whistles, granola bars to help the day laborers that are there. So we pass out care packages in the mornings and talk to people there and find out what other needs they have. We also try to help afterwards. People don't realize that after people are kidnapped, it's not just like this one person is taken or a number of people are taken. Families are completely destroyed. These people are the ones who were the main breadwinners of the families. They were the ones providers of the families. And then you have to find them in the system. They're not offered any legal like help. It's very hard to get some and rent, like their trucks, things that are left afterwards and stuff. So we try to help both with providing care for them during the event while they're there. And we also try to find them afterwards. And if you're in the South Bay, hillresponseteam@gmail.com is like, you can get a hold of us if you want to come out and help us give care packages. If you want to help build the care packages, donate money to actually make more care packages, help us with finding people, raising money for people to pay rent and for, and then, or even trying to hire some people so that people don't have to risk basically their lives being at these Home Depots to just survive.
And you've also helped them with the day labor organization?
That's right. We also work with the DEFSCA, which is the Harbor. They have a Harbor working work center in Harbor College in Wilmington. Oh. And connect, we try to connect them there so that people could actually, you know, find work and not have to be at the Home Depots. And also they provide food distribution and they do clothing distribution to help people out during these hard times.
And anything else?
I think at a time when politics are so corrupt, we need to realize that one of the biggest, our biggest tool, one of our strongest tools is how we spend our money. Home Depot has demonstrated that they do not care about the humanity of the situations. They don't care about families being torn apart, and they've targeted day laborers and harassed them long before these raids started happening. I think us as responsible citizens, the thing we can do is boycott and send a clear message that we won't tolerate this because it really is such a big erosion of our rights. You know, this is how fascism is ushered in, and we have literally mass military men who can have impunity right now to do anything they want. And that's something scary. Today it's coming for our indigenous population in this country. Tomorrow it'll come for someone else. And if we don't draw the line right now, then we're inviting a very dangerous future for not only ourselves, but our children. And so I think our community needs to step up. Our indigenous community has done a remarkable job of bringing together this community to watch program and rapid response program. And now it's time for labor and the rest of us to meet the moment too and take action.
Hetzel?
I think there's a contradiction here. I would have to say their day laborers have been under attack the worst and are getting attacked the most. But at the same time, there is a lot of support for them. So we just really want to encourage more support for the day laborers. They need it more than any other time. I often like speak to different crowds and say, if you were in Germany in 1939, the question is posed, are you going to hide Anne Frank or are you going to turn her into the system? Because that's what they're facing. We need to more people out at these locations, helping the day laborers get work and actually could not be at risk for anything else. So come out and support any way you can.
Oh, and can you also tell us about the coalition? Like, is any union involved?
We have Teamsters involved right now, but mostly it is, we have General Strike LA involved, but Union del Barrio is involved, Community Self-Defense Coalition, ADEPSCA, Hill, Labor for Palestine. There's a whole bunch of different groups associated with the boycott. And again, I think what makes our coalition effective is that these are the communities, these are the organizations within the communities that are being most affected by these raids. And they are really people on the front lines. And so that informs our boycott and our campaign in a very vital way. So we'd again encourage people to get involved, visit our Instagram page, and you'll receive updates on all of the work that these coalitions have been doing.
Ketzel, is there any social media for Hill? Or
there is a social media for Hill. Yeah. It's Hill_network and Instagram. It's on Instagram. So it's Hill_network. You could write us there, ask for more information, or find out what, you know, we're one of the endorsers of the Black Friday action, and we're in the Boycott Coalition. And if you want to join that, please We can get your information there. If you want to contribute to any of the other things that we have going, message us there and we'll put you in contact and put you to work. Everybody coming out now is what's really needed.
So this is Reggie Wong,
Quetzal from Hill,
and Miriam from Boycott Home Depot Coalition
with this Working Voices update.
That was Reggie Wong's interview with Quetzal from Hill and Miriam from the Boycott Home Depot Coalition. And for more information about the Black Friday Abolish ICE event, you can go to Hill Network or Boycott Home Depot, both on Instagram.
This is Working Voices, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and to the rest of the world at kpfk.org.
On this segment for Working Voices, executive producer Dan McCrory speaks to Ernesto Medrano, the executive secretary of Los Angeles and Orange County's Building and Construction Trade Councils, about the future of construction and labor in Los Angeles.
This is Dan McCrory for Working Voices talking to Ernesto Medrano. Up as the executive secretary of the LA and Orange County Building and Construction Trade. Good morning, Ernesto.
Good morning. How you doing, Dan?
All right, great. I want to first ask you is how did you get involved in the labor movement in the beginning?
Oh, you want to go back that long? I've been doing this for 40 years. I was a rank and file teamster when I was a college student unloading trucks at convention centers. I really didn't pay attention to that. I was just doing it to make some money to go back to school. But so when I was at UC Riverside, I was very active. I was elected to 2 terms in student government, a number of other organizations, MECHA, some of the Chicano student organizations. And because Chicano City was my major, we were in a knockout battle that they were trying to eliminate the program. So active in various capacities. And the United Farm Workers were hovering around there, some of the alumni. They were doing organizing in the Riverside area back in the early, middle 80s, whether it was citrus workers in Casablanca or they were out there in the Romoland, Hemet area organizing onion workers. And so they kept trying to recruit me to go out with them. And I said, look, man, I'm from L.A., concrete and steel. Why don't you go get the kids from Coachella and Blythe or Indio that came here, that are coming to UCLA? Oh, no. So they want to get out of the valley. They want to leave. So they kept trying to get me involved. I said, look, that's not what I've been involved with. I'm an urban kid. Eventually, what they did is they invited me to participate in their negotiations. And the way they did, they said, well, we need your help, Ernesto. We want you to take notes. And in the breaks, the caucuses, if you can interpret to the committee, the workers that are going to be in the room. So long story short is I did that. And that's where the bug bit. I realized that that is where you build power. That is where you meet the employer face to face as an equal. And you have some level of say so in your wages, benefits and working conditions. And so that ever since then, I got excited. And shortly before I graduated, the United Farm Workers recruited me to go work with them. Back when Cesar Chavez came to our campus to speak about some propositions in 1984, shortly thereafter, they approached me and they said, well, how'd you like to come work with us? And I was ready to go. Didn't ask what they paid. Didn't ask what they did. I just thought I wanted to organize. And I ended up in Coachella, representing the grape and tree fruit workers, which were the palmeros, those are the date palms, and then also the table grape workers. And I knew nothing about labor relations. I just was like this energetic kid that, you know, went out there and did things and didn't think of the consequences. I don't know how many times the growers would call the office and say I needed to inform them when I took access and stuff like that. But shortly thereafter, I went on the boycott. And I spent a couple of years out in the Midwest, on and off, Chicago, Detroit, doing boycott work, chasing the product and boycotting the supermarkets, as Caesar had in the past. And then right around 1986, the Immigration Reform and Control Act passed, and the AFL-CIO in Los Angeles decided to do that to help immigrants, to aid immigrants. And at that point, we went out there. I came back to L.A., and I got hired at the time it was Dave Sickler, regional director. Him and Bill Robertson, running the Fed, were talking with the unions about creating a program to assist immigrants to adjudicate their status on the Immigration Reform and Control Act, the famous amnistia, as they called it. So I got involved with that, and we did a lot of organizing around that. Because once workers were able to achieve their employment authorization, their legal status, they started to get bold and they started to organize. So we saw, as a result of a lot of that era, we saw the Justice for Janitors campaign. We saw the American Racing Equipment campaign with the machinist union that I was very deeply involved with. 1,200 workers in Rancho Dominguez that organized a wheel company and so forth. So it just took from there. The National AFL-CIO hired me and I started to do more and more support organizing with the affiliates. Shortly thereafter, once the machinist got a contract with that company, they had me go work with them. And I spent about 6 years with them there. And at some point, there was a change in the leadership in the National AFL-CIO when John Sweeney got elected for the first time. They took out the incumbent, and that'd never been done. And so there was this whole change going on, and some of the – because I knew folks from the – as they call it, the incumbent staff, and I knew folks – that were coming in from the SCIU world primarily, they asked me to come back to the AFL-CIO. So I spent another few years there doing work with them. And then I kind of decided I wanted to get back into the fight more closer to the ground. And that's when I bumped into Patrick Kelly. And he was looking for staff. And I went to work for the team for Local 952 in Orange County. So I spent about 14 years there. And that's how I got involved with the building trades. Our local had ready-mix drivers, but I didn't have any of those workers to represent. But I noticed that the building trades were the only labor entity that knew how to get things done, how to move like in Anaheim, California, where it was so conservative. But yet we were making progress. I saw the building trades. And we had a lot of members, a lot of employers who represented that. I represented the workers for these companies, such as Disney, City of Anaheim, municipal workers, as well as waste workers from Republic Services and Angels Baseball. So I said, this is the place, this is where it's happening. So I got involved with the building trade because they were getting it done. And as a result of that, I got very acquainted, participating very active with the building trades. And long story short, when that representative retired, I put my name in and Ron Miller hired me. And this in January will be 11 years I'm working with the building trades. Over 2 years ago, I got elected as executive secretary. So I'm the guy that can't hold a job down. Okay.
Where do you feel you learned the most? Was it back in the day with the farm workers or was it, lately with the Teamster? Or where did you really pick up most of your knowledge?
Where did I pick up most of my knowledge? I took a little bit of everything. I know one time I told John Sweeney, I was staffing and we're driving and he says, you come from unions that have been extremely traditional, like the machinists. And some that are almost unorthodox, like the United Farm Workers. So I learned a lot of my fundamentals with the UFW. Caesar was really good, and the whole board there and leadership was very good about teaching you a lot of the fundamentals of organizing. But you know, the one-on-one, the house meetings, the you know, organizing one worker at a time, building committees. I think I was able to enhance on that working for the other unions. I mean, I had a chance to organize high wage, high skill workers in the airline industry, aerospace. And that was unique. You know, I didn't allow anyone to pigeonhole me to say, you're just going to stick to organized immigrant workers because you're a Chicano, Latino, and that's it. I left my comfort zone and I'm glad I did because it enabled me to understand more, the entire labor movement, what it was about and how do you engage not just immigrant farm workers, immigrant workers in the manufacturing shop, but also high wage, high skill workers in other sectors.
There's always something new to learn, isn't there?
Yep. Every day.
How does the labor movement differ in California from everywhere else?
You know, I think we're fortunate that we have had more power being built in California to the labor. We have good labor leaders. We had obviously a political climate that has enabled the labor movement to flourish, to grow, and to take the lead across the country. I think everyone looks to us. Those changes, whether it's immigrant workers organizing, whether it's, you know, politically battles that we've had. I mean, I think Prop 50 is a classic example. Thinking outside the box, the labor movement rolled up its sleeves and got involved with that and made it happen. California has always been in the forefront of having progressive labor laws, whether it's the Agricultural Labor Relations Act or public sector worker organizing laws. And so I think we're fortunate. I think other states are not as fortunate where they have right to work for less laws, like in Arizona or the South, where union density is obviously less and therefore reflecting lower wages, lower benefits, and therefore lower living conditions for workers.
How did the apprenticeship programs come about?
Well, apprenticeships go back quite a while. I mean, if you want to look at from the medieval years, I mean, when you have artificers, right? I mean, they go, the concept of being an apprentice and moving up goes back to those years. But more in the contemporary time, you have both parties at the table equally represented and setting the tone, governing the apprenticeship program, establishing the criteria, the curriculum, the instructors, and looking at the future technologies and the future direction of which the industry is heading towards. So it's helpful to have the worker representatives at the table, and it's not just a unilateral arbitrary decision by the employers. We're very excited to have about 24 training centers around our jurisdiction, our area. We have about 23,000 apprentices in Los Angeles and Orange County. Wow. These are more apprentices than any other state in the nation, by the way.
How have the programs helped the job market and the labor movement?
I think, I mean, clearly these programs, obviously an apprentice comes in, they earn and they learn. It's not one or the other. They're working under the tutelage of a junior level person. They're going to class. They have to meet the requirements of the class. As they're moving to their apprenticeship, they start to make they get their wage increases. Every step, every period they complete. So as long as they meet the standards of the classes as well as the hours that they work, then they get bumped up. They start about 50% of the wage rate of the junior level person. And I think one of my staff, one of the reps said something to the effect, to paraphrase that, there's nothing more empowering than an apprentice with a paycheck. Because they're starting to make, you know, decent wage as they move up into it's a pathway to the middle class. We have made a difference in the building of, the middle class in Southern California.
How many have, decided they want to give back to the labor movement to get involved that way?
Oh, I mean, if you look at our leadership, right, they all evolved, came from through being apprentices. All of them have gone through, become journey level. Some of them have moved on to even own their own companies and be signatory. So I can say that, I mean, all these apprentices that have moved through have gotten involved with their union. The building trades, it's like when you go, unlike any other employer, you sign up with the union first. You participate in the joint labor management training program, which is dominated heavily by union instructors, right? The journey level folks that are teaching. And then the union dispatches you to their work. So they're very cognizant of the importance of their union, and they participate and contribute heavily. We can turn some people out. Our members get involved in the road for slaves, and they mobilize. They know the importance of stepping up and showing up.
In your estimation, what is labor doing right?
I think labor is clearly setting the tempo politically, establishing policies, establishing legislation that helps not just union workers, but all workers. Whether it's the prevailing wage in our world, whether it's getting the project labor agreements with the public sector, even the non-union workers benefit from the legislation that we pass, the protections on safety and health in particular, the standard that we establish with the employers when we negotiate our agreements have to be adhered to by even the non-union contractors many times. With the best wages, benefits, and working conditions is something that we do very well.
What do you think labor gets wrong?
I think, I mean, obviously because we're a reflection of, I mean, our membership, there's varied opinions. So we tend to move slower when we're making decisions. I think it's challenging, but just it's the nature of democracy can be cumbersome, right? So we can't just make a snap decision, right? We're accountable to our board members. We're accountable to our member rank and file members. So a lot of times our decisions are deliberated, debated. And so it takes a while to get things, you know, moving sometimes. I mean, it's a weakness and it's a strength at the same time, right?
And labor activists, have you got any advice for them?
Stay involved in your union. Go to your meetings. You know, really pay attention to what's going on out there. When you're asked to participate at a meeting, participate. One thing that I always tell, I go to the apprenticeship training centers and give tours to elected officials. And when I leave the classroom, I give them homework and I tell the apprentices, do me a favor, go back where you live. If you have children in that school district or if you reside in a city that's incorporated, go introduce yourself to that mayor or that city council member that represents you. Go tell them what a union construction worker does and why they should hire you instead of a non-union contractor. Same thing with they have children in the school district. Go introduce yourself to that superintendent and to that school board member. Tell them you live there, your children go to the school, and tell them why they should build the classrooms with union labor. If there's any one thing that I always tell them or folks, that's your homework, I tell the apprentices. And come back and report back to your instructor when you're done with that conversation. Because I think that really that's what sets it home. You know, they say all politics are local. When you tell that member to go visit their own elected official in their own community, that sets the tempo. So that way, when we go talk to those elected officials, they've heard from our union construction workers out there.
I know that the building trades have been very involved in commercial building, but how come you guys never got into residential building?
Big difference. I think we're at the tip of the spear, at least in Los Angeles, in terms of getting back into the residential. We have been involved with passing some robust measures to build affordable housing as starters. For example, Measure Triple J, Measure Triple H, which is still in play, Measure ULA, that's, we're seeing a few projects now starting to roll out. And more importantly, Measure A that was passed last year countywide. And all of these programs provide monies, resources to build more affordable housing, and they have to be built with the labor standards, the apprenticeship standards, and under a community workforce agreement. So I think we're trying to figure out how do we get back into that, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously the best way is when you have government involved, when you have labor involved, when you have the community involved, kind of like an industrial policy to build residential. So on the private side, it's still difficult. We see a high level of exploitation out there. Wage theft is rampant, cheating, you name it. And primarily it's an immigrant workforce, many of them undocumented. And so they fear retaliation. And we've seen it lately with the ICE raids, how those contractors are having a hard time now. So I think it shows the value that we need to uplift those standards in that industry. One of the things that we keep hearing from these developers and contractors that they say, we don't have enough skilled workers in the construction sector, in particular the residential, but they do nothing to invest into training or apprenticeship.
You seem to be very aware of what's going on legislatively. Speaking at federal level, how do you propose people get along with this administration?
This too shall pass. We just have to look forward to changing the makeup of the White House, the administration, and getting back people that understand what working people are about. You know, in the past administration, we saw some good legislation that helped in terms of the infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, that all had labor and apprenticeship standards, and it invested into energy, it invested into the infrastructure of this country, which is sorely needed, but done the right way. Got to take that house back again. Locally, I think we're going to be able to, I won't say survive, but succeed, because last fall we probably helped pass approximately just under $15 billion worth of school and community college bonds, all under a project labor agreement in the different districts. We passed Measure A for the residential piece, and we're going to have to continue to do that. But I think in a few years, we're going to have to get involved, roll up our sleeves, and change that White House, so we could get back again and start to invest in this country properly.
Do you think there will always be enough jobs for everybody?
I think so. I think we have so much to build, so much to do. Our infrastructure is old. Some of it is 100 years old or more. It sorely needs to be rebuilt. Even the American Society of Engineers have given low grade, like C minuses, in some instances, to bridges, roads, water infrastructure. Energy in particular. So we need to work harder on a comprehensive energy portfolio. So I think there's going to be work for folks. There's no question about that. We got to get back on track on investing in our state and our country again.
What ways can labor evolve and adapt to gain members and traction in the hearts of the middle class?
College isn't for everybody. There's been this move in the educational system to just herd young people into college and university. And it's not for them. And so they're starting to see that, hey, working with your hand is something that, and learning a skilled trade is something that can provide you a good way of living. And you, by the time you complete an apprenticeship, you don't have the debt. You don't have to pay tuition and fees. you're already making money and you're being protected. But I think in addition to that, we have started an apprenticeship readiness program under the umbrella of the building trades here in LAOC. We have the multi-prep core curriculum that we partner with. We want to see more women come into the trade. We don't have enough. So we're working very hard to remove all of the barriers they might have in front of them and help them get in so they can compete once they're in the apprenticeship programs. We're working with community colleges, community organizations, so we could reach out to these young men and women that want to come in and get a career. We're the greatest hidden secret in society. People didn't know about our apprenticeship programs. And so we need to tell our story better. We got to start to demystify what construction is about. They see a construction worker, they're soiled, they're dirty, they're sweaty. But that person in that dirty attire can make six figures, have a middle-class income, own a home, give their young family an opportunity to do whatever they want to do with their children. And so we need to start educating people as to who we really are. And we want to welcome them and bring them into the industry. We need them.
That answers one of my other questions I was going to ask you. What has LAOCOC done that the rest of the labor movement can take as a lesson for us to implement something like this?
We started our apprenticeship readiness program sort of a decade ago. And so we have placed well over 1,900 individuals into the joint labor management training programs. This year alone, 25% of them were women. Many of them are formerly homeless. Many of them are formerly incarcerated. Many of them have not had, didn't know, didn't have the opportunity or aren't going to go to college. And we're given that opportunity. We also take a lot of veterans that are leaving the military and funnel them through our Helmets to Hard Hats program, put them into the apprenticeship programs. So we're doing unique things that way that I think are that we didn't do before. You know, we're reaching out to the community, and you can see we're changing our rebranding. We're telling our story. We're getting involved more with social media, where we have our publication we put out quarterly. Again, it's telling our story. What is the union construction worker story about, and how can you can become part of our family?
You're doing amazing stuff, Ernesto, and I'm really proud of the building trades, because we've all known about stuff back in the 60s with the Vietnam War. And this is a new organization as far as I'm concerned. And this gives people so many opportunities to rise up out of poverty and become part of the middle class. And thank you for all your efforts and all the work that you're doing out there in the community. And I'm going to start sending people your way. You have anything?
Oh, thank you, Dan.
Anything you'd like to add before I...
I think we see the evolution of the labor movement. I was fortunate to get elected, like I said, about 2 years ago. I'm the first person of color, first Chicano Latino to be the executive secretary of the LAOC Building Trades. If that doesn't change, what is it, right? Exactly. But we're working not just having one person, but we want to reach out to members of the community that have not had the opportunity. So with that said, we stand in solidarity with everyone in the labor movement. But more importantly, we want to continue to build with the right standards and with industrial democracy being an integral part of what we do.
Thank you again for taking the time out to speak to us.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you.
Take care.
That was Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory in an interview with labor leader Ernesto Medrano. And for more information about Los Angeles and Orange County Construction Trades Council, you can find their website at laocbuildingtrades.org.
We never get paid what our labor is worth. That's why we often in the days on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
You've been listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and online at kpfk.org. I'm your Working Voices Associate Producer, Hal Lohr. And before we sign off, and with the Thanksgiving holiday weekend approaching, our Executive Producer, Dan McCrory, asked our show's staff to name something we were all thankful for. Now, of course, we all would answer family and friends, those we love and those who love us, because those predictable cliche answers represent the bedrock of our emotional foundations. And in these troubled times, and I know for many of us, troubled times doesn't even begin to cover it, it becomes more and more difficult for us to look around and see anything that anyone could be thankful for without some reservation or thought for those who are really struggling. But forgive me for a moment if I do take the time to remind us of some of those things we can be thankful for. First, let me be thankful for all those people out there who are fighting the good fight to make the lives of regular people better. Whether union organizers or political activists or community volunteers or just sign-carrying marchers, the growing numbers of people who show up, roll up their sleeves and get involved because they can see a better future than those people in power will ever offer. And yes, holiday season, so not starting a debate, not naming names, at least not right now. So let me be thankful, and let's face it, you knew this was coming, for listener-supported radio, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, one of the few uncompromised places in broadcasting where the voices of opposition and resistance to the corporate media's narrative can still be heard. Public broadcasting, who can bring you a show like Working Voices that celebrates and supports the fight of regular working people. A station that has always stood for peace and truth and the ideals of people power, in an expression of peaceful unity as strength in the face of violence and oppression, and now, let's face it, occupation. And of course, if you'd like to show some thankfulness to us, you won't hurt our feelings if you pick up your phone and call 818-985-5735, or better yet, go online at kpfk.org and donate to keep Working Voices part of KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. And finally, from everyone here at Working Voices, let me thank our show's listeners. That person just waking up, maybe stuck on the road at 5 a.m. on a Monday morning, getting ready to take on the day while sharing this time with us. Believe it or not, we'd like you to know that we are thankful for you. And we hope you, your family and friends, those you love, and those who love you, have a great holiday weekend. I'm Hal Lohr for KPFK's Working Voices.
And that's our show for this week. You've been listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and online at kpfk.org. And we're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to consider underwriting the show. Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. Please contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. We want to hear from you. Email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. This is Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United for K. Michael and Joe Ayala. With our thanks to Dan McCrory, Steve Zelser, Gary Scott, Hal Lohr, and our guest. Please continue to give what you can to keep us going. We're in this together. Have a happy Thanksgiving from all of us here at Working Voices. And always remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
So much work, 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 yeah, work, work.
This is Kathy Diaz, your Monday host of Global Village. Join me for an exploration of Afro-Cuban rhythms from next door and around the world with other musical stops along the way. That's every Monday on Global Village from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders. Make your tax-deductible donation to kpfk.org today. Membership has privileges. Becoming a sustaining member of KPFK, keeping independent radio alive at kpfk.org. You can't beat it. Free speech radio can't survive without your generous support. So become a KPFK sustaining member right now. You can pledge as little as a dollar a day at kpfk.org. And thanks.
To engage in any activity
that shall contribute
to a lasting understanding
between nations and between the individuals of all nations,
races, creeds, and colors.
To gather and disseminate information
on the causes of conflict
between any and all of such groups,
and through any and all means
compatible with the purposes of this corporation,
to promote the study of political and economic problems,
and of the causes of religious, philosophical,
and racial antagonisms.
That is our mission. Yeah.